Hello and a warm welcome to Food and Music here on the Isle of Wight. My name is Paul Bell Chambers and this podcast is inspired by the hospitality sector and also the food and drink producers that we have on the island. And I think it's an important part, or certainly a part of why the island was given a UNESCO biosphere status recently. So there are some exciting things going on. It's very vibrant. And I'll be talking to many of the people involved in it from the food and drink side and also in the hospitality sector. We'll try and understand what they do, how they do and why they do it, what got them into it, and try and learn a little bit about them and get some music selection from them as well. So I hope you enjoy the episodes and enjoy the series. So welcome to this episode of the Food and Music IOW podcast. This one's entitled The White Wine, and this is all about Adjeston Vineyard, which I hadn't really heard of, and I had contacted them prior to seeing the Channel 5 series Isle of Wight, Jewel of the South, and funnily enough, as it turns out, they were one of the sort of stars of that series, and I believe the series is coming back for a second season sometime this year. So I don't know if they'll be involved with it, but hopefully they will be, because we'll get to see a bit more of what they do. So Russ and Philippa Broughton have been involved with the vineyard for over 10 years. They come from non-wine making, and I'm told non-wine consuming on one of their parts, got themselves into running this vineyard, which is set in a beautiful location just on the side of a south-facing hill overlooking the east coast of the Isle of Wight, and it's a stunning view right the way out to sea. And the location is brilliant. It has its challenges. It is one of the oldest. We'll come to understand how long it's been going in the first part of the conversation I had with them. Slightly difficult to start to the interview because they were having some problems with some of the equipment, and they were about to open for the summer season the following day, so it kind of was just one of those things. But I did get a good conversation with them, and there's also some music to go with it, which is not unsurprisingly has connections with wine. So I hope you enjoy the music that goes along with this as well. So without further ado, let's hear the first part of the interview with Russ and Philippa.
Right, well, I've come out today to the east side of the island, and I'm here at Adjeston, and I'm with Russ and Philippa, who look after the Adjeston Vineyard, which, as I understand, is the oldest operating vineyard in the UK. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. Built in 1968. First vintage was 1971, and it's never stopped making wine ever since then.
I think technically we're meant to say continuously.
Continuously. Okay. Well, I beg your pardon. Make sure we get the PO's right.
This Twigger's Bruton thing here, and there are vineyards around, but they've been shut down for years, and then someone else has opened them up. But
all right. So from the point of view, how familiar with you were you with making wine before you came here?
Never made a bottle in my life. I didn't even drink it.
You didn't?
No, right. Not even a home brew kit. Never made anything about
it. Really?
Didn't know anything about it.
So what, I won't use the word possessed. what made you change your, because you're an engineer, or an eccentric engineer, as you described it.
Not now.
And you're a tax lawyer, I believe, so is two very different, you know, backgrounds to come from and then come into wine. It is.
I don't think they're that different. I mean, there are certain skill sets that go with each that lend themselves quite well to the business, as much as literally the winemaking side of things. There are, as you say.
But that's by default, isn't it? That's things we discovered later.
So I can hindsight.
It's always the way, isn't it?
I hope you're now beginning to get a flavour of how Russ and Philippa work together, and also their sense of humour. And if you go to their website, which is adjestonvineyard.co.uk, on the About page, there's some great photographs, but you also get a lovely comment, which is, so what do you get when you cross a bored corporate tax lawyer with an eccentric engineer who has a whole load of crazy ideas? It could be the start of a Christmas cracker joke, but it's not. Throw into the mix the UK's oldest vineyard and 10 acres to play with, and what you get is total madness, blue wine, chilies with flaming bottoms, I'll come on to that bit in a minute, and live music every day you can. And it is amazing what they put together there and what they've built over the last 10 years or so. The vineyard, as I said, is in a beautiful position. They have been replanting vines in the last year or so, 18 months or so, and we're talking numbers that would A, you know, blow your mind, and B, numb your hands if you had to plant them. They both spend an awful lot of time out there in the vineyard, plus they have a shop, and they're running this little food and drink cafe regularly during the summer season. So they keep it very simple, which is great, and they have live music as well. So it's a really, really, really cleverly thought through and brilliantly put together business, and I think what they're doing is fabulous. And I think it's not surprising that they were chosen to be part of the TV series, because I think what they are doing is amazing, and I don't think we really get to see it up close. So they're open pretty much every day through the late spring to early autumn, and it's well worth a visit if you get here onto the island for any length of time. So go and visit them. So coming on to the music, well, what would you choose? It would have to be something with wine, and it's going to be Red Red Wine by UB40. So having just got that little introduction from Russ and Philippa as to why they're doing what they're doing and the vineyard, we started to get into the different vines and the whole process of making wine and the sorts of things they've learned in the last 10 years.
Why the Isle of Wight? Were you familiar with the Isle of Wight before? Or
Only by chance, really. About 12, 13 years ago, I was just over seeing my sister. She's lived here for quite a while. Came over for the weekend, and it was a rainy Saturday, so we couldn't go out. So we just switched on the telly and we were watching a film. It was Avatar, actually.
One of my
favorite. By 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd already opened a bottle of Rioja, and I picked up the local county press, which I'd never read before, on the center pages. It just said vineyard for sale, and it was one of those, wow, just have a look at that for a laugh. And that's what started it, and it was just a laugh, because at the time I was chief engineer at a container port. So yeah, that's where it started anyway.
Fantastic. Well, that's quite a change. That is quite a change. So as I mentioned, it's the oldest continuously operating, kind of that is, vineyard in the UK. So what makes this part of the island special for growing vines?
Well, Isle of Wight in itself has got its own microclimate. Yeah. I think most people know that. Some of the plants that we can grow in the garden. When I lived in the other side of the water in Chandlersford for 40 years, I'd buy seeds from the botanic garden and try and plant them in Chandlersford, and they just die. It just doesn't work. But over here, all sorts of strange things. Yeah.
The echiums are a good example.
Yes, they are. Yeah, my wife is fascinated with those. She planted those as soon as she got wind. So.
And to that, in that sort of vein, English vineyards do suffer quite badly from late frosts.
Yeah.
So you get bud bursts in April, and then you get an April frost, and they can spend thousands of pounds buying these little tubs of wax, spreading them all across the vineyard under the vines and lighting them to try and stop the vines from, where the buds will die. And you just don't get that on the island. Mm. We are very lucky, so it's a very reliable place to be able to grow. Mm.
Last year in particular, it was horrible for quite a lot of the vineyards on the mainland because of this late frost, and we just sat watching the news coverage on it thinking, oh, thank gosh.
Yeah.
No, we could be out there in the middle of the night trying to keep candles lit and all sorts of things, but here, just not an issue.
One of the West Sussex vineyards last year, we know for a fact, spent over £20,000 in candles trying to keep it warm, and it didn't work.
That's a lot of new lights.
It is, yeah. They're a bit bigger than tea lights, but yeah. That part was absolutely fantastic. plus we're on chalk soil.
Yeah.
which makes us very similar to the climate in Champagne district.
So are you still growing the same vines or have you tried new ones?
Now, originally the vineyard was planted in the 60s with Reichensteiner, Sauvignon Blanc, Dornfelder, I think, as a red. We've still got the original Sauvignon, which are the oldest vines in the UK, despite what Wiki says.
I saw that comment on the book.
We've got four rows of them.
Four rows of Kitsland, 354-year-old. Which is still harvesting, and we're making something blue from those, aren't we? The Pub Blues Buckland.
Yeah.
We've got Rondo, which originated in Czechoslovakia.
Right.
Which is a cool climate, dark black grape, makes something similar to a Malbec kind of flavour.
Yeah.
Phoenix, which is one of the Peewee varieties, isn't it? Developed for.
Not even going to try and pronounce the fourth thing for Peewee. It's the most complicated
one.
Yeah. It's basically a crossbred grape that's designed to withstand all dead mildews on salt and so. But that works really well, doesn't it?
Orion.
Pinot Noir.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've got eight varieties out there, and we use different varieties for different
things. So you have different mixes for the different bottles that you produce?
Yeah. Yeah. So our blush, our very light rosé, is pure Pinot Noir. Mm. And that seems to be one of our best sellers, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's sort of sold out by the end of the summer.
That's brilliant.
Phoenix for the dry white and the oaked white. It's wonderful to be able to do a wine tasting and say to people, right, okay, because you know you get people that say, I'm a certain old drinker, I don't like Chardonnay.
Yeah, like my wife.
Or vice versa.
My wife says that.
To actually be able to give people wine to try, to say, right, actually, this is the same grape, but one essentially tastes a bit like a Sauvignon and one is a bit like a Chardonnay, and it's all down to the process that the wine has been through. It's quite a revelation to probably about 80% of the people we're doing wine tastings to.
So you've had to really learn a lot and take on board.
Oh, massive amounts. Yeah. And we've made so many huge mistakes. And the answer is just don't make the same mistakes twice.
Yes. Could have was the expression you keep banging your head against in the hope that it will fix the problem.
Absolutely.
Dear, that's amazing. I think we've sort of covered the vines, and that fascinates me because I used to work with Marshall Wines. It's just understanding from him how he was able to identify and the actual basis of the wine through, you know, for the actual grapes that were being used. I just find totally fascinating because it's just
I think that's a lot of it is where just the basic engineering understanding comes in. It's a laboratory. If something adjusts, then you don't want it to go that way, then you readjust it.
Yeah.
It is weird. I left school thinking, I'm never going to need this algebra nonsense again, all this chemistry. I can completely forget it. Yeah, okay. It's so much.
That comment you made about hindsight, but you obviously have got those sorts of skills, or you had them.
Yeah,
but
I didn't realise.
But you couldn't put them together in.
I did a degree in maths later on or maths and engineering, and I had no idea I was going to have to use algebraic equations as much as I do now, almost every since
then. I mean, I don't think most people will realise that's what goes on.
No.
C1, B1.
C2, B2, there's a lot. I mean, the basics.
Yeah, but everybody just thinks, you grow a plant, get some fruit, you do something with it, pop it in a bottle, and that's it, you know, and it's not as simple as that.
Well, a lot of homemade wine tastes awful.
I won't go down that, because I'm not the kid either. I've done beer, but never wine, so there we go.
So that's the conversation as it is so far, and the really interesting thing that came out of that for me was how much they're two disparate expertise is the engineering and the tax and the chemistry that Philippa has came into play, really, probably very early on in when they took the vineyard on. So it's a fascinating thing to think that, you know, not just are you thinking about things from a growing standpoint and the plant husbandry and all that sort of good stuff, but you have to think about the scientific side of things when you're making a bottle of wine or bottles of wine. So it's quite an interesting thing to hear from a vineyard, from a winemaker, and it's I don't think it's something we probably really appreciate. So it's good to hear. So we'll move on with a bit more of the conversation after we've heard from Dean Martin doing what he does best, Little Old Wine Drinker Me. So we're coming back to Russ and Philippa, and we're going to be covering all sorts of things in this section, which is everything from the weather to planting, managing the plants, and just basically looking after them. A little bit of a conversation about to be organic or not to be organic, as it were, and when also talking about not just the wine side of the business, but everything else that they do at Agistone. So it's an interesting part of the conversation.
So you talked a bit earlier about the weather and the critical factors in the year with sort of the frosts and stuff like that. I mean, it fascinates me. You talk about last year as the frost being the interesting point rather than the dry summer itself.
Well, that's another interesting bit in itself, but for a completely different reason.
Yeah.
The established vines were quite enjoyed last summer.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. The babies are the trouble. You know, once you plant a baby, the roots are only, 10 inches deep.
Yeah.
And they can't get the moisture, so we have to water those by hand. And
we planted 900 new vines last year, and then obviously we had the drought period, and you had to come up with a novel way of watering the vine.
Mm, yes. 1,000-litre tub, didn't we? IBC with a hose hanging out the back. Philippa was running behind with the hose. I was driving with a tractor with water.
Did anybody film that?
Yeah,
I did that. Oh, I've got to say that.
We were doing it. But a mature vine, the roots can be 20, even 40 foot deep. So what's happening on the surface has got, not an awful lot of relevance to what's happening in the ground.
Is the old iceberg effect?
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
They did sort of start to suffer slightly towards the end a little bit, but then all of a sudden we had that rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
They came just at the right point and yeah, all the grapes.
But it takes a long time for the, for that to precipitate.
So in your harvest last year was, in September?
Yeah, late September. Late September. Start harvest, yeah. And it was a couple of weeks early this year, wasn't it, because of the, the sun. It was because it was so hot as well, we didn't get all those troubles of powdery mildew and, stuff.
Yeah.
Years,
yeah.
So, which is normally in moisture.
Yes, because it was quite a dry, dry period, so there wasn't that much damp around and nothing like that.
And downy mildew is, it's a similar thing, but it reacts quite differently. Downy mildew is, a water drop from the rain hits the grass, and the spores in the grass jump up and touch the lower leaves. And then once you've got downy, you notice ink spots all over the leaf, and, it can be devastating for the crop.
In summer 21, we had quite bad.
Really downy.
And we went up to the Phoenix, which...
How to cope with that? Or do you just have to let it run?
What will you get?
Is that it? You just go with the flow?
We have a spray program. This is going to upset an awful lot of people, and I'm not hoping to get my high horse, but we're not organic, and the main reason is because I'm very against it. And if people knew what organic actually meant and went into a farm, then they'd see that they're spraying the crops with sulfur and copper every 6 days to the point that the leaves look yellow, not green. Organic doesn't mean you don't use chemicals. It means the chemicals you use are derived from the soil or from a plant. And they're in such high concentrations that I just refuse to put that amount of chemical on our plants. So we dab, covering my body with Vaseline for 10 years in case I get a touch of eczema. We put a bit of cream on the touch of eczema. Uh-huh. And that's...
Yeah. No, I find the organic thing kind of had its heyday, but I don't think it's quite as prominent as it used to be.
Well, I think it's just a misunderstanding if people knew what it meant.
Yeah. It's just very good marketing, that's all.
Well, that's what it was originally. And unfortunately, it's kind of had that... As a chef, I don't get asked very often for it has to be organic. I get asked for it gluten-free or vegetarian or dietary, but I never really get asked it has to be organic, which I find fascinating because when the first organic thing hit, there was a lot of hype around it and a lot of interest in it, but it never really, I don't think it really caught on in the same way as the dietary stuff is getting more and more prominence.
But we still get a surprisingly high amount of people, during a wine tasting lesson. Is it organic? Absolutely not.
He's being very polite, right?
I can tell he's a check. But I think it's great that you are being firm about it, because I think you're right. People do really need to understand what it actually means.
But so it's not just a sort of outburst about how inappropriate organic is or how poorly explained it is. Ross will actually go and get some of the sulfur and the copper out and has them in a little bottle and shows people. So it's explaining it visually as well to try and increase people's understanding, which is pretty much the approach we take to everything.
And it is people's choice if that's what they want to do. Yeah. It's fine. As long as they actually understand what it means.
Yeah. No, and I think you're absolutely right.
8 litres of sulfur to be sprayed on 1 hectare every 6 days, whereas us, 14, every 14 days, it's 220 millilitres of an active ingredient. Can you imagine the two volume next to each other? You know,
it's size competition, isn't it?
Or half a cup compared to a barrel.
Yeah. It does, it doesn't make sense. No, I agree with you. And
moving rapidly.
But in terms of the year, you said earlier, you know, you've got to worry about the frosts and things in the winter, but then you know the process of the year ends with the harvest. So what happens in between? Because I know you've also got accommodation and all the other things that go on here. So it's quite a full-on summer that you have.
Well, you've got a lot sort of different operations of the business, haven't we? But the field uses up most of the effort.
Yeah,
in July, each of those vines is growing at 1 foot a week. I'm trying to keep that canopy under control is, you know, very difficult. And we rely very much on volunteers, don't we?
It is. That's sort of so harvest itself has always been done with volunteers, and people really enjoy it. But prior to COVID, we didn't really use volunteers in any other capacity. And then when COVID happened, because we were sort of everyone was locked down, we didn't have any form of income at all, so we weren't able to keep staff on, despite the fact that farming was obviously one of those excluded things.
Yeah.
Which meant it was just us trying to keep on top of the vineyard at a time when it's actually growing its most rapid because it's spring. And it got to a point where it was so overgrown and we'd fallen so far behind that, you know, despite being quite positive and really hard working, just sat there and said, there's no way we can claw this back. We put out a post, ended up with sort of 300 odd volunteers. People were just desperate to get out and be able to do something. And it was a safe environment in which to do it because you're outside at a considerable distance from other people.
Yeah.
And people enjoyed it so much that ever since then we've had a much smaller group of people come back each year and help me with the different stages of the vine.
It's great.
It's lovely, isn't it?
That part's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we also got the accommodation. Which is actually the original 1970s shop at the front of the house,
right,
which we've converted into a very rustic-looking two-bedroom self-accommodation, that's quite nice.
And then, of course, there's the shop, the farm shop, and the
beautiful
hospitality side of it, and the wine tours and tastings.
And the live music. You know, we've got live music every afternoon throughout the summer. It's the food of Sunday 5 days a week, and that really pulls in the people having lunch and they're eating antipasti and enjoying the wines. So,
well, we moved here 2 years ago, and we spent a lot of time going around the island, and we've sort of found the various different parts, but we completely missed.
Well, no, there's sort of the number of people that turn up and go, God, this is a hidden gem.
Yeah,
it's people. You think, especially if you live here, you think vineyard, that's one of those tourist places that you need to go to it. Bad interested. But there is this whole outside dining element and the music. And we do find that when people find it, they keep coming back, which I think is probably
best compliment of all, really. You get repeat, absolutely.
So I hope you found that part of the conversation as interesting and as fascinating as I did. They have a wide array of elements to the business, from accommodation to the shop to the catering to the events and the wine tasting, and obviously making the wine itself and managing the vineyard. So they get through a hell of a lot of work each summer. I take my hat off to them. So in celebration of that, we're going to have, this is corny, sorry, Oasis with Champagne Supernova. So welcome back. This is the final part, and the conversation with Russ and Philip then got into the wines, and in particular the blue fizz that they do, which is fascinating to listen to as well. Then we talk a little bit more about the retail and scaling and how they're doing business and so on. So it's an interesting final section, and let's listen to what they had to say.
And I'm fascinated. So you've got the different wines, so a white, rosé, red.
Yep.
And then you've got this blue.
Ooh.
I'm not going to ask you, but what on earth? How did you get to that?
Again, and that was actually an accident.
And serendipity.
Well, we were filtering the Rondo grape, the Czechoslovakian red grape that we got to make red wine. And as it was going through the plate filter, you always get a certain amount that drips out the bottom of the plates onto a wet floor.
Yes, wasted wine. It's mine.
Please don't. And we just, on the floor, we took a photo of the floor underneath the filter. One side was red and one side was blue. It's just like total colour separation. And it was just, it was fascinating. We couldn't work out what was going on. But during harvest of the black grape, the Rondo, we always look like Smurfs. Our hands, our arms, we're totally blue. And it's something in the water that we would use, just cold water, that makes everything go from red to blue. And it was just to...
It's not so much it goes from red to blue, it splits out.
It splits out.
Actually, it splits the colour.
The felt, you know when you did, I don't know if you ever did it at school, the felt tip pen on the blotting paper, and add a bit of water and the colour would split out into like the rainbow.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Just a bit like that.
That's what started it all, wasn't it? And it just became fun. And actually we went on from, it took about 2 or 3 years to get it to work properly all the time. And we've got a lovely product, which we're proud of. But then we started playing with other things, didn't we? And we'd make elderflower wine as well from all of our own hedgerows. And then we thought we'd have a play with spirulina, the natural seafood, powdered seaweed.
Yeah.
I think it's organic, actually. So we fermented that with the elderflower, and the wine came out bright green. And so that's been great fun making that one.
So not only is it one in the 5 a day because of the grape element, but it's a superfood because it's got spirulina. We had...
Breakfast wine, we call it. Breakfast wine.
Breakfast wine.
Often have. I think a lot of good things come out of accidental discoveries or just something that happens. I was fascinated when I saw the blue fizz. I just, that is really cool. And I'd love to hear how you got to that.
The thing is, we don't ever know what's going to come next, you see. I'm only doing Sparkling Red this year as an experiment, which I know has been done by thousands of people before, but we've never done it.
Right.
But we'll have Sparkling Red, Sparkling White, Sparkling Cuvée, and Sparkling Blue, Red, White, and Blue Bubbles.
It's very appropriate.
On another vineyard in the world that does the...
Yeah, so. Well, that's... I think it's fascinating, and I will certainly have to get myself one of those at some point this year. So I think your year is going to be... pretty full on, as you say, and I guess when you get to the harvest time, then you get a chance to switch off for a bit, but then it's that getting ready.
No, you don't really get that at all. We go straight from, so we hit this funny period where a lot of our staff over the summer period are students.
Yeah.
So they all go back at the end of August, so we've got this period of a couple of weeks at the beginning of September where we're operating on minimal staff numbers, so probably 4 of us.
Mm.
And we've still got loads of customers. And then it goes straight into harvest, which is full on and very...
And you're open as well during the harvest.
Yeah, we don't close until Christmas, do we?
We limit what we do, so it might be that we're not able to do wine tastings one day. We're actually harvest.
Events or whatever, yeah.
But we're still open. You have harvest, and then you're into the early stages of the winemaking. And then there isn't really much of a pause after that either, because there's all the tidy up.
So winemaking and then straight into winter freedom, about 9,000 vines to prune.
So the winemaking process, how long does that take?
The initial part of it probably only takes about 3 weeks of work, doesn't it, to do fermentation, settling. And then because we don't use chemicals in the wine at all, the only thing we actually put in there is a powdered clay called bentonite, and that separates the proteins to stop any pad stabilization. But we don't use any finings or
anything.
And a lot of the wines that are made quickly and sold cheaply have got egg and extract of fish in and sorts of things to try and stay there, settle the wine faster so they can get it out on a supermarket shelf. Because we don't use anything, it takes at least 10 months for the wine to naturally settle, doesn't it? So
we can say it's vegan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is vegan. Yeah. Yeah. Which is one thing we're not against, you know. That's a white choice.
I'll have to send you a check. Across the...
Darling, use the word who.
Choice me on a... I even saw an advert the other day for a Dyson Hoover for sale. Which one is it?
No.
You don't get Ford Vauxhall, do you?
No.
I mean, it's got to be one of the two.
I went on... We were on a train the other day, I think it was one of the great Western ones, and where the bit you meant to plug your laptop into, a little sign on it said... Please use this plug socket. It drove him up the wall for the entire change.
That's like OCD giving your RC a red card in. Is it a plug or is it a socket? Come on, I'm an electrical engineer. It can't be both, can it?
No, exactly. Exactly. So, from that means you're at least a year before you can sell or get the bottles into retail.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, generally, 95% of our retail is from our own farm shop.
Right.
And we don't buy grape from anybody. Everything we make's from our own Tenneker Bill.
So you're not adding anything.
So really, you know, local produce shops are nice because it gets our name out.
Yeah.
But we won't ever go into a supermarket.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be in there for a month and then we'd run out and then we'd have nothing to sell in our own vineyard. So it's... Well,
and really, unless... I mean, how many acres have you got here?
10, but only 8 of them are under line.
Well, so you'd need a lot more.
You would, and then you'd go into a much bigger operation. Yeah. And you wouldn't be able to do all of that here in the subterranean cellars. You can't extend underground easily.
In those quality of life, yeah. I think, yeah. At that point.
No, I think there comes a point when you say this is how we want to be and how we want to do things. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's exactly what I've done. I know what I want to do, and I know I don't want to go any further than where I am. Because it's the easiest way. I like doing things like this. I've done other things as well, but it's just keep it as simple as possible and manage it.
And we've seriously upscaled. There's something blue, haven't we? So we're making 6,000 bottles a year.
And we've got hopefully the other 900 vines that we planted last year. They'll come online in about a year,
2 or 3 years.
Don't send you from the heads and know you've got to gear up.
We're still never going to go into the supermarkets, not with wine. We've got a chili company that we're pushing to try and do that with, which is more sustainable for a...
It's upscalable.
Yeah.
One, whereas without having, a few hundred more acres.
Chilies and wine, see?
Chilies and wine, yeah, yeah.
What a combination.
Yeah.
I now get the as mentioned on the truck, you can't...
It's not nice and fine. It's
The thing is, industry...
And now,
wine is
quite... for that, right? It's got a good sense of...
Yeah.
There's so many norms behind this wine. And for me, Philippa, with our rather cheeky senses of humour, you need something else that you can have a real laugh on.
Yeah, my humour's not quite as borderline as yours.
I think that's how it goes. All I can say is thank you very much for your time and good luck with this year. And I wish you all the best. I'll definitely be over during the season and see how you're getting on. And I won't be asking you questions. I'll just can have a drink or something. So that'd be good. But thank you both very much for your time. And I look forward to seeing you on the TV sometimes. I've got to mention that later, which I will do.
Thank you very much.
So as you can hear, they've both got great sense of humours. And the things that came out of all of this was they work hard and they love to have fun. And they do an awful lot of work during the course of the year. And I'm just amazed at what they do get through, to be honest. These things that happen, so like the blue fizz, really come along and add some value to what they do, even though it was initially an accidental find. But they've been able to work through it and make a product out of that, which is great. There was also mention of these chili products, which actually I had been wondering, because I have seen this truck one around the island, and the tailgate has an image, you know, images of fire, and the wording is arson fire. So the word arson obviously means something else, but when you string it together and think about chilies, it makes perfect sense. I think it's a great play on words, which is obviously one of Russ's little foibles. He loves to play with words, and I think that's a great one. So more power to both their elbows. I think they're doing a wonderful job at Adderstone. It's a lot of fun, and yes, I will be in there during the summer. So I hope you enjoy the podcast, and as I said, the Channel 5 program on the Isle of Wight, I believe, is going to be coming back. I think I've read somewhere that Alan Titchmarsh is going to be starting the Cows Week, Round the Island race. So I think that will probably part of the TV series when it comes out in the autumn. So we can all look forward to that, and it'd be nice to see some new people involved with the series as well, because there is so much going on the island, and hence my podcast. I've actually got a new website, and it's called theislandchef.co.uk, and that is where you can find things such as recipes, the podcast, and so on. It's sitting there, as well as on the other platforms such as Spotify, Amazon, Google, and Apple, and so on. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a lot of fun to do, and hopefully we'll see you on the island sometime soon. So next episode coming up is going to be about Grace's Bakery, and there's some more new businesses coming along as well in the future. So this island never stops developing new ideas. So keep your ears posted, and there'll be a podcast about, or an episode about, some of these businesses coming up soon. So take care, and enjoy the rest of the summer. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Food and Music Podcast. I'm very pleased that you took the time to do that, and so grateful for your ears. Thank you very much indeed. I've got some more exciting episodes planned coming up over the next few weeks and months. And if you would like to share this podcast with friends or family, it's available on Spotify, Amazon, Google, or Apple, and a couple of other platforms. So thank you very much for doing that, and I really appreciate your time, and look forward to you listening again to the next episodes of the podcast.